Welcome once again to the Earth Mystery Show. I'm Haynes Ely. I have on the line Cliff High. We're going to be talking a bit about what the future might hold for all of us. Cliff was one of my favorite guests, one of the most popular ones we ever had on the Earth Mystery Show. The phones lit up for about an hour after we talked to him last time, so stay tuned. This is a pledge drive, as you know, and we will be pledging along the way. Before we start today's show, I'd like to remind you that Larry Melton and Prajna are having a retreat called Awaken to Your True Self this coming Saturday, June 13th, from 10:30 a.m. till 6 p.m. The doors open at 10 a.m., and the theme is dispelling the myths of spiritual awakening, allowing you to access more of who you truly are, expand still alive ground of who you are already and always here. If you want to attend this, both Larry and Prajna are enlightened people, and it rubs off on the people that come to see them. RSVP by calling 530-274-1405, 530-274-1405, or you can email Prajna at prajnaflow, P-R-A-J-N-A-F-L-O-W, prajnaflow@yahoo.com. This is a pledge show. For today's premiums, I'm giving away previous shows. You can have a copy of today's show if you want, and there are two previous show packages. One's called the Castaneda Series, and these are the live interviews I did with Carlos Castaneda's witches, Florinda Donner, Taisha Abelar, and Amy Wallace, and the only interview ever on radio of Don Juan, Carlos Castaneda's teacher. There's also a couple of interviews with Marilyn Tennyshend, and two with Amy Wallace, who was Carlos's wife for 20 years. The second premium package is called the Psychedelic Series, and those are live interviews with Terrence McKenna. There are three or four shows. Luis Eduardo Luna, Brett Blosser, and a couple of shows with Jonathan Ott. If you send in $60, you get one of those series. If you want to pledge $89.50, you get both of them, and those are courtesy of me. So, let's see if we've got Cliff on the phone. Cliff, are you there?
I sure am.
Good to hear from you again.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Cliff High does a website called halfpasthuman.com. And on that website, he's been doing since, I think, what, 1996 or 95?
97.
He's been doing analysis of linguistic changes. And the linguistic changes that he analyzes are done by web bots, or what do you call them?
Spiders.
Spiders.
The spider programs are the things that go out and gather the data. And then the data is brought back and eaten up by a bunch of prologue programs.
And this data is basically anticipating. It's it might be in your own words, a rickety time machine. It's anticipating what's going to happen in the world by the changes in language which precede those events. And that just goes to show that the whole world is a little bit, or a lot, psychic, and that we incorporate in our language words that might have something to do with what's coming up in our future.
And totally unknown to us, yeah.
Totally unknown to us. And how do you interpret the information that you get?
Well, basically we work off of shifts in emotion that are relative to language. So if we see a spike in very emotional terms that say the easiest ones to find, of course, are the extremes. So we could just take the case of fear. If we saw lots of words that were directly or peripherally associated with fear, then we say to ourselves basically, aha, something scary is out there and heading our way. Makes sense?
Makes sense to me. And What made you think of this? I mean, how did you come up with the idea of language precedes events?
I actually sort of noticed a bunch of stuff relative to language and how humans use language. Really, you can think of it as a couple of different ways. Artists use lies to reveal or deliver the truth, but politicians use lies to obscure the truth. And so they're both using falsehoods, which are structured language relative to what they're trying to obscure, but the very language they use to obscure it actually reveals it. It just is it's a curious feature of how humans attempt to communicate that our language actually, to a certain extent, is not under our control. We think we're choosing our words carefully. As a matter of fact, there's sort of prompters, if you will, from the subconscious that introduce words at weird times relative to the situation at hand. So we're all familiar with the concept of the Freudian slip. And why that occurs, we can leave aside, but we know that it does occur, and it occurs on a mass scale, and it's frequently occurring at levels that were, that are beyond our perception, but if aggregated, provide us with a very large view of a, if you will, the whole populace having a Freudian slip about something that's coming up. Something, in essence, that we know to be true. That was really the underlying premise of Freud's notice of how language sometimes trips us up. And, of course, cops use this, you know, interrogators, interviewers even, and people come on in and they use language in certain ways, not understanding just exactly how much is being revealed by what they're saying, or more specifically by why a particular word is chosen that means the same, that, to fit a slot, but it may mean the same as, say, 13 or 14 or 30 or 40 other words. And it's, so you kind of wonder, why use that word at this time? And some words have forward-looking bias to them. And I just started noticing this stuff in the late 80s, just in casual conversation around me. And then in the 90s, when I was able to start aggregating vast quantities of data that wasn't necessarily numbers, I came up through the telephone industry, so mainly I dealt with, you know, large numbers, telephone bills, this kind of thing. And once I started processing language at the same level, I started becoming aware of very diverse patterns that were showing up and wondered, okay, this is curious, it's consistent, now why?
The NSA monitors email traffic and phone traffic looking for, I suppose, terrorists or plots. Are they using algorithms similar to yours?
Yeah, they're probably using something quite different because their approach is they care about who says what to whom, and I don't. I don't really care who is saying anything. What I care about is, in general, is which words are being leaked out now. And as an example, we can take two people online talking about a car theft, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can say, George says to his son, my old lady jacked my ride. And so that's one way of saying that someone, that his ex-wife stole his car.
Mm-hmm.
And he could quite easily have come out and said, you know, my ex-wife stole my car. Or he could say, you know, a bunch of swear words, your mother stole my car. And each of those ways of stating this, that simple premise, that his ex-wife stole his car, in his opinion, reveal a certain amount about what's going on. So he says, for instance, in the first case, he's using slang. Well, slang has an immediacy value that provides high impact emotionally, but it trails off fairly rapidly. Now, if he had said, my ex-wife used an attorney, and he starts throwing in legal terms to repossess my car or to, you know, take my car, what I can't think of the word at the moment, in part of a divorce settlement, well, legal language has necessarily a low emotional impact at the moment, but a long duration. So it's like the opposite of slang. And so we just kind of like stick a range out there with slang on one end and legal language on the other, slot all the words in between, and start making guesses as to which kinds of language lead towards more of a archetype view or of the future. And that's something else I discovered, was that within the patterns that were flowing through the language that was appearing on the net, people had a tendency to cluster at certain times language into what I referred to as archetypical themes. So there's no real reason why people on a dog forum or a garden forum or bread baking should sit there and discuss things like their family. But you'll notice, if you just sort of pay attention to those fora that you do go to, that you'll see that certain themes seem to waft and wane through the general conversation as people drift off topic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the drifting off topic part that really got me interested. I started collecting all of those with my software. Now, getting back to the other approach to it, the NSA cares about specific words, and they're looking for specific context and words and even duplicitous language around those, again, Freudian slip kind of things, and then they attempt to form networks and find out, you know, who the bad guys are in their opinion and so on. In my approach, it's entirely the other way. It's like the individuals don't really matter. What matters is the aggregation of the language as a whole.
And you... Your data sets are constructed on a sidereal lunar month. How did that happen?
It turns out that there is a small level of differentiation or differential flow in these patterns. That if you were to just sit there and use the spiders the way we do and then bring back all of the data, you'll actually see an ebb and flow very much like a tidal kind of an effect, only instead of occurring twice a day, it occurs approximately twice a month. Only I noticed it was not a solar month. It didn't really line up with the calendar, but it was very, very, very regular. And so it settles between 28 and 29.25 days. And I actually think it's related to the solar cycle of the internal spin at 28 days of the, I think they call it the second median sphere inside the sun. There's actually three levels of rotation in the sun, and one of them is precisely at 28 days, and it very closely matches what we see in our data. And it was just a pattern that was emergent.
I'm just going to go through some of these things so the listeners know what we're talking about. What's a metadata layer?
A metadata layer is where we collect conversations about all different kinds of stuff, and for whatever reason, let's take the archetype of a family. Family is an archetype that is constant across cultures. Somebody in the Amazon knows it, somebody in Russia, somebody in California. We all know what a family is. So you're sitting there in your fora and you're talking about your dogs or your plants or whatever, and psychically we get a discussion of the family as we drift off topic. What we would call a metadata layer is if on the same time frame we got that same archetype of a family showing up not only in garden fora but also in bread baking fora and gardening and all these others all pretty much at the same time. That makes sense?
Yeah.
For whatever reason, we're all drifting off in our topics into the same direction at the same time in diverse places, and we see these same archetypes across these many diverse places.
And that's what you call going vertical?
No, that's a metadata layer. Going vertical is where, it's really a computer term. That's where we have data that is ramping up on a J curve, on an exponential curve up. So, for instance, in January we see five or six references to firecrackers, and the references to firecrackers and fireworks builds up, and then around May or so, it's no longer at this little 30% grade or whatever. It reaches the bottom of the J curve and then hits vertical as we approach July 4th. Make sense?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So you have a bunch of different categories that you've made up for the layer labels, I guess, as you call them.
Yeah.
And some of these are restrictions on movement, encounters with scarcity, secrets revealed, conflict, duality, impetus for change, restrictions on movement.
These are all very large aggregations of emotionally cohesive, off-topic driftings that form those metadata layers. So, for instance, we see a very rampant metadata layer all through 2009 for transformation. Lots and lots of words about personal transformation, finding your center, and then there's also the broader scale of transforming the society, transforming the economy. Change is just out and about in the wind everywhere in all kinds of language. And so all of that lumped together forms the transformation layer.
Our guest today on the Earth Mystery Show is Cliff High, and I mentioned at the beginning of the show that he has a website called Half Past Human, all one word, halfpasthuman.com, where you can log on and tune in and read all this stuff. There's also another website that you recommend, and that's George Ury?
Ur, yeah.
Ur.
UrbanSurvival.com.
And he, I gather, talks with you quite often and summarizes some of your latest data
on his
website. And you have a growing dome. I noticed the pictures of that, too.
Uploading new pictures. Oh, I built a dome a while back because the data indicated that we were going to have severe conditions that would impact the ability to grow food where I'm at. Mm-hmm. And so it just made sense to get really serious about it and get a structured greenhouse, and a dome is the cheapest, most effective way to cover any amount of space.
Well, in our county, we have a lot of dope growers. This is like the dope growing capital of the world. So, greenhouses and hydroponics are sort of major industry in Nevada County.
Yeah, hydroponics not so much up here because of the mold issues.
Oh yeah, you're in the Pacific Northwest, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So, what's in our future? When I talked to you last time, I said, are we heading toward an infrastructure in this country comparable to Angola? Is that the direction we're going?
Part of there's some real data to suggest that our economics are going to be much more like Zimbabwe, that we're going to hit hyperinflation.
Right.
And that hyperinflation is going to be very, very caustic to the entire monetary system and to all the digital dollar stuff. It's going to really ramp up starting October 26th of this year, although we expect the visibility level, that is to say, you know, when it reaches the notice of the middle class, so to speak, about November 5th or 6th. But from November of this year, basically early November of this year, until very early November 2010, will be a period of time where we're going to have Drano going through our financial system from the hyperinflation that's caused. What will remain is going to be anybody's guess. But I don't think the dollar will remain. We're really pretty confident that as of, say, sometime this winter, mostly the dollar won't be used as an international reserve currency anymore, and that'll have huge impacts on us, including amplifying the hyperinflation.
You say this winter, you're talking about February, January 2010?
Correct. Actually, December, early December, so a little bit before the actual onset of winter. So, say, from December of 2009 through January, February of 2010 will be the next big dumping phase of the dollar as international reserve currency.
And what's that going to do to the guy on the street?
Well, here's our situation. We've got a bunch of little green pieces of paper or red or whatever color they are now. Let's just say $20 bills, right? And now it's okay. You can go on over and you can swap the $20 bills and more or less a quid pro quo, you know, $1 34 cents for a euro, that kind of thing. Well, in December and thereafter, all through next year, we're going to get to the point where in order to buy those goods that we cannot manufacture, that we're dependent upon, oil and everything else, we're going to have to pony up a lot of these dollars to buy real currencies in order to be able to buy those, because nobody's going to want to accept dollars. And so we're actually seeing the potential, not to say it'll develop this way, but the language suggests that people will be talking about it this way for sure, of $200 and $300 and $400 a barrel oil.
Well, you mentioned in one of your newsletters, I think the most recent one, that around that date of October 26th, Israel would attack Iran.
That's the indication we have now, yes, that at some point from 26th on, an international crisis develops. That international crisis gets mixed into a huge muddied stew of all kinds of nasty weather globally, as well as this economic crash. So it's all happening all at once, and it's going to cause some real severe hardships. And the indications are quite clear so far. We don't have any new data to conflict it, that Israel will indeed attack Iran and will cause everybody on the planet some real misery.
I know that the Obama government has sent envoys to Israel to beg them not to attack Iran. And I'm just wondering, on your spiders or your bots that go out and get all this data, there is news right now about U.S., you know, going and pleading with Israel not to attack Iran. Would that show up as an attack on Iran, or would that show up?
No, we actually saw that language about 6 to 8 months ago manifesting for this time. So we're still on that temporal marker trail that leads to Israel attacking Iran in the fall.
Now, when you see one of these futures, is there any way for us as people being forewarned to do anything about it?
I don't know. If you're asking me if time is mutable, I don't know. Can we change this? I believe we can, but we would need a certain amount of emotional energy, I think, to overcome the emotional trends that are there, based on just a mathematical approach to things. Now, is there anything we can do to prepare as individuals? Certainly. There were dozens of people, I mean, lots of people knew World War II was coming. And I have a personal example that where this fellow knew that war was coming and had been through World War I. He knew what the restrictions were going to be around here, knew it would be worse. So before World War II broke out, he went around and bought up every tire he could get and shoved them all into his garage, and he was
the rubber king of the Northwest.
You got it. He was retailing tires for years when no one else could get them. So, you know, and I know a guy who did the same thing with toilet paper. And, you know, that's not uncommon in military people. But they know it's coming, and they do things. Now, on an individual level, yeah, you can do all different kinds of things. The nature of the attacks and the warfare that we're seeing lead me to believe that the whole thing is a giant fiasco on all sides.
It wouldn't seem good for anybody, would it?
No, but I mean also beyond that, a whole series of screw-ups compound each other in the sense that the Israelis screw up and they attack Iran. They further screw up and they're not prepared for the devastating losses they face in the actual attack. Further in the details, it suggests that they use some new kind of weird weapon that vaporizes a nuke plant or a nuclear storehouse or something in such a way that vast clouds of radioactive crud are thrown up into the atmosphere and they circle around the world for years, causing misery and death. So much so that current allies of Israel, such as India, immediately start, because of the millions that die and are sickened, immediately jump on the bandwagon, and everybody holds a giant conference over the course of about 10 to 12 days. And within the data, we're getting into interpretation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so my monkey mind says that, well, I could interpret this data to suggest that this international conference is hastily called, and Obama is summoned, and he is told, you eradicate Israel, or we will, and essentially by the rest of the planet. And oh, by the way, the rest of the planet says, if we have to do it, we'll take out the U.S. too. And so, you know, we're faced with sort of a Hobbes choice there, right, between the devil and the nasty Zionists. And at that point, it's anybody's guess as to what happened, what actually goes on. Now, that is speculation on my part, because it could be interpreted that this delay is a period of time where people try and calm the waves of anger that are going around the planet, and that fails, and then there's this attack. Basically, there's an attack by Israel against Iran, some major nasties for the people of the planet, a period of 7 to 10 days in which there is no retaliation to speak of, and then there's an overwhelming attack that just literally glazes the place.
Wow. It's the bottom of the hour. Time flies. It's 12:30 here in Nevada City. You're listening to KVMR 89.5 FM. My guest today is Cliff High. Cliff has a website called halfpasthuman.com. Fascinating place to spend some time, as you can tell from our conversation. And if you pledge during this hour, we do have a pledge show going on. If you pledge during this hour, I'm personally giving away some of the previous Earth Mystery Show as pledge premiums. There's two series. One's called the Castaneda series. The other one's called the Psychedelic series. The Castaneda series is live interviews with Carlos Castaneda's witches, Florinda Donner, Taisha Abelard, and Amy Wallace, and the only radio interview ever with Don Juan, Castaneda's teacher, as well as a couple of interviews with Marilyn Tennyshend and Amy Wallace, again, when she was Castaneda's wife. The second series is called the Psychedelic Series, and a bunch of live interviews. And it's 60 of shows, Earth Mystery shows, or 89 and a half that I'll make for you. And I'll send those to Cliff, too, just... As a premium for being my guest and being so much fun to talk to. But we're not limiting the amount you can donate, and the amounts you can donate can be any amount. KVMR always needs money at this time of year. And one of the things that I like to, and his name's Connor, so he's now a member of KVMR. And the reason I buy my dog a membership is because with any new memberships or renewals, there's a drawing for a fantastic bike. So I wanted to be sure that at least my dog was in the drawing so I could drive him around on the bike. And there's all kinds of premiums that I'm not offering on this show, but you can get on many other shows. And one of my favorite ones also is an angel pledge. An angel pledge is $1 a day for a year. And as an angel, you can come in and do my show or anybody else's show and drive the bus. You can be the disc jockey as well as get all kinds of premiums that are on the list for angels. So call 265-9555 or toll free from Sacramento, 1-800-355-5867, and let's get some pledges going here in this hour. Okay, back to the real world. Or the real world as seen by your process. Okay, if Israel attacks Iran, that will paralyze any kind of oil or any kind of commerce coming from the Middle East to the United States.
That happens beforehand. But you're quite correct. That finishes the global economy and pretty much puts the cap on it and screws it in real tight. No, but in our data, it shows that from July 15th until about August 16th, in the background on the planet's level of abstractions upon abstractions that we call the banking and financial system, we have what we know as derivatives going into a meltdown.
Right.
Now, bear in mind, derivatives, of course, are notational valued at something like 6 or 7 or 20 times. No one really knows how much.
More than all the money in the planet.
Correct. All of the money in the planet, in order to satisfy them, we'd all have to get money from Mars or some other planet for 4 or 5 or 6 years and sell everything we own in order just to pay these things off. And so they go bluey on us over a course of about 30 days.
Why can't the powers that be just say derivatives don't count. You know, just wipe them out.
Well, basically, that's what's going to happen. But the problem is that there's so much tied to them. And they're tied back to things like interest rates, even levels of government employment in certain countries. They're tied to soybeans and orange crops and all different kinds of weird things all cross-tied together. And their nominal use was to help in financing this. And so the reason the government can't basically do that is because they've been such a huge promoter of the thing. It's like the situation of someone who's just been, you know, pumping the racetrack like mad, saying, oh, it doesn't matter anymore, don't come here and waste your money on this particular form of gambling. It just will not happen. The powers that be find themselves, over the course of this next year and a half or so, constrained into ever tighter circles based on their former activities. So, for instance, imagine the impact on the planet of the powers that be, and I'm talking the Obama administration as well as, you know, any other administration you want care to name, doing something atypical, out of the ordinary. What would be the impact on the United States if Obama came out today and said something out of the ordinary, like, we're going to release all of our records on all this stuff, and by the way, here's a picture of a dead alien that they showed me at such and such a place. And we've got, you know, and he comes on out and starts talking about, I've personally seen spaceships, we personally have anti-gravity and free energy and so on. You know, vast quantities of revolution around the planet just almost instantly in terms of thought.
Mm-hmm.
That's extremely unlikely to happen, but it would take that level of magnitude of stuff in order to get rid of the derivatives. They would have to come out and essentially declare a jubilee because so many people owe so many other people and forth, and we're in the middle of it.
I think I might have asked you about that last time you were on. What about a jubilee? It was a biblical thing. Why not do it again?
Right. Actually, it turns out that we'll probably be close to that in circumstance in 2013.
We're going to make it past 2012, then. That implies.
Well, some people are. At least the data seems to suggest that. But it's going to be a real tough few years. If we're correct, the warfare stuff can really spiral out of control. And then we also have this weird stuff for, and I'm talking strange even for us, for 2011, that we're just tentatively at this stage labeling the alien wars. And it appears to go on for nearly 8 months. Now, whether it actually involves space aliens coming on down and shooting at us, or the threat of it, or we're just sitting here and two groups of space aliens start, you know, duking it out over our heads, we don't know, but we're getting more and more linguistics under that seem to suggest that it's a real probability. Now, let me back up and say that we had this long-standing forecast that we thought would start May 14th that was related to what we called the global coastal event, first in our definition, and then we started calling it the global coastal phenomenon, and then phenomena, because there's just too many different things going on for it to be a single kind of an event or a phenomena. And in fact, the linguistics for that is showing up on time. Now, people said, well, you know, we were expecting a giant wave or something on from May 14th on. And I've been at pains to point out to people this is a 5-month process that this language will filter in over. So I don't think it's an individual daily event. It would take a huge event for us to continue to discuss it 5 months after the fact or 5 months ahead of it if we were anticipating it. And rather, what I thought it would be lots and lots and lots of little events. And sure enough, right on schedule, we get the government now talking about, in real fear language, about an 11-foot sea level rise in the northern hemisphere just from Greenland going, and about the impact on the coast this year of no ice in the Arctic. And now the governments are talking about permafrost that ain't frozen anymore in Antarctica, and it's not refreezing in the winter, and how we're getting all of the spread of all these exotic creatures up and down all of the different coasts, and so on and so on and so on. We've got, I think, about 340 examples so far of the language starting to appear and starting to build. The key to saying this, the reason that I point this out, is that however outlandish that particular set of forecasts appeared, the language is showing up in spite of everybody's interpretation of it as a giant wave or something that would impact them personally. It is indeed starting to show up, and it will impact them over the next 5 months. And this language is in the same stream that produced the Alien Wars language.
There's a lot of stuff on the internet about false flag, about the U.S. has anti-gravity craft and that they came originally from Nazi Germany developments, and that we've captured alien spacecraft and back-engineered anti-gravity drives, and that we...
Sure, and I would have no reason, I don't believe it, but I have no reason to doubt it, and I think there's plenty of evidence towards that effect.
Yeah,
but I don't want to have a belief structure around
it. There's plenty of that stuff on the internet, that there might be a false flag war where the powers that be that are not so cool will pretend to attack Earth so that the Earth will rally around them. And
that would fit within our linguistics.
Keep them in power instead of booting them.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. The power structure that we have now, people kowtowing to, quote, royalty, the whole bloodline freak thing going, the organized structured religion like the Vatican, all of this kind of stuff. By 2013, the wave of transformation will pretty much done away with most of that.
We had Jose Argelez on the show about a month ago, and he's the guy that brought 2012 to the public, you know, perception.
Sure, yeah, I've read his work for decades now, I guess.
Yeah, and he was a real nice guy, and we also had Joe McMonagle on the show about 2 months ago, and Joe's one of the premier remote viewers. He was like the number one guy for the government for years. And I said to Joe, well, what's going to happen on December 21st, 2012? And he said, nothing.
It's not a big deal.
He says, I remote viewed that day for many people. There's, you know, it'll be a day like every other day.
Yeah.
So
what I worry about, though, is the relative to that is the period of time in 2011 reaching up until, I think, November of 2011, simply because relative to the position that we're in, the impact on the planet becomes much more exacerbated. Everybody at this point is starting to get into a paradigm shift, both actually and we had forecasted, that they're going to start realizing that there's going to, the word is undeniability. By the time we get to the end of this year, we're going to have an undeniability factor on the Earth changes and an undeniability factor on the dollar death and the other transformational processes that have been engaged. And we think that the reason that we're going to get this undeniability factor on the Earth changes is because the oscillations of the weather and climate will be so severe that almost everybody's going to have to acknowledge that this is just not an ordinary cycle.
We've been having thunder and lightning and rain here, and normally in June it's hot and dry.
Well, broke our previous heat record by 22 degrees, absolutely staggering.
Wow.
And then the next day it was 60 degrees colder temperature.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's quite odd, and it's going to get even worse. And this does not relate to solar cycle, because whatever is affecting all of the planets in the solar system is also causing the impacts on the sun. And I actually think that it's related to what I call the big squeeze, or this magnetic band at the ecliptic of the Milky Way.
Well, according to the big squeeze theory, which I believe is yours, things will be squozed down until 2012, and then what's the release of the squeeze is going to cause more turbulence than the actual squeeze itself.
I believe that's the case, yes.
Well, we're in for some fun times. If you ask a stockbroker, what are you buying right now, the answer is ammo and groceries.
Yeah, I would say you could probably do without a whole lot of ammo, and you need a lot of groceries, yeah.
Well, I was fishing the other day, and we went through Colusa, a town on the way to the Sacramento River where we were fishing, and we went by a guns and ammo store, and they were just about out of ammo. So somebody's preparing for something. I mean, the public is out there buying up all the guns and ammo they can get a hold of.
Same thing around here. Just happened, probably a week ago. Drove by a rather secluded guns and ammo place. It's an interesting building, and I always look at it because it's a Quonset hut with a giant duck on top. So you're very easily seen if you go down that particular alley. And the parking lot was jam-packed. Never seen that many cars there ever.
Yeah, yeah, people are stocking up. So somebody knows something that we don't know. And
they're all feeling it. They're
feeling
all expressing it. in their individual ways the anxiety that's been building up over these past couple of years, and that anxiety is just the kind of thing we tap into with the language. Because long before they actually get up off their butts, get into their car, and drive to the gun store, they will discuss these feelings or leak it out for months. And that's what we've been picking up. So the general level of anxiety that yourself and your listeners and we're all feeling is where we live at Half Past Human. And we've been seeing this since 99.
Well, you said, in I think in your last newsletter, that you were basically going to kind of shut things down because the future was so depressing that you didn't really want to keep the weekly newsletter going. But you are going to keep it going, right?
Well, Universe came and beat me about the head, and I had to readjust my plans. My deal with Universe was that I would do this work as long as I could possibly stand it, and Universe demanded it, and I had reached my limit, but Universe hadn't reached it. So yeah, I've had to readjust how I'm going to do things so that I don't spiral down into this bleak depression over it all. But nonetheless, we are continuing, and we're going to do it in a different format. We're going to release them on a weekly basis, no subscription, buy this one, not buy it as you choose, and have like a $10 price tag on them.
That's very reasonable for amount of work you do. Well, I was actually thinking, you know, boxes of ammunition, like a little one of those cubes of 22 shells that has 50 shells in it, might be fungible. You might be able to trade that for a bag of groceries easier than paper dollars that are worthless.
I'm sure that'll be the case. That was exactly the situation in Argentina. And we have Argentina as one of the most recent, quote, modern civilization countries to go through this. Now, they had a lot more practice at it than us, because they've been through currency crashes, like, you know, every 8 or 10 years. But it's going to be interesting in the United States when this occurs. We may indeed continue to try and still use the dollar. They may try and prop it up. We could see the government taking draconian measures to try and protect the powers that be. Also, by the way, our data suggests that if it is meaningful that nearly all the incumbents in Congress are thrown out in 2010.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah.
The prospects for foreign travel, let's say you wanted to go to Europe or go to South America this summer or next fall. In one of your newsletters, you mentioned that there would be people stranded, like soldiers stranded.
Correct. Now, that's a different issue. Okay, the soldiers are going to be stranded because they rely on a subcontracting base. Okay, let me back up. We have 1,000 military bases. We, the United States, have 1,000 military bases scattered around the planet. We're in 150 different countries. It used to be that when you went to a military base, you got onto a military airplane and they flew you there. These days, you go by commercial air carrier to the local areas, take local transportation to the base, and so on. And this is also true with all of their logistics. It's all handled by private companies and private contractors. When the government gets into this coagulation phase of the hyperinflation and starts running out of money and options, then those contractors, a lot of them are just going to go out of business, and those that are not dependent on the U.S., that are not based here, will no longer be accepting dollars and won't do work for us because the dollar will be worthless. So the military bases are going to be a different issue than regular travelers. If regular travelers, to a certain extent, have money and wherewithal, even in spite of adverse circumstances, they can probably buy their way home. But some of them are going to be caught out in the sense that you may have a ticket that, say, takes you to Italy, for instance. You fly from New York to Italy. Hyperinflation starts, and you go to get back on that airplane, and they say, no, you bought your ticket in dollars, we've had to put on a surcharge because you didn't pay anything near enough, and then they're going to want $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 to cover the cost of the ticket getting back.
Mm.
That kind of a deal.
And is there any possibility that we would go to a, let's say, a gold or silver standard because the United States does produce a lot of those metals?
It is possible, but none of that would be quick. That would be a 4 to 5 year process. There will be scripts offered according to our data, individual kinds of scripts, giant gray and black markets where, as you point out, fungible goods, you know, actual possessable goods are much more in demand than anything relating to currency, et cetera. So we will see those, and we'll actually see a de facto silver standard. But I believe it'll be on the background in the sense you won't go to a Safeway store to trade silver for, you know, a gallon of milk. But you might go to somebody, trade your silver for the script of that particular county, and then go to that store and use that script.
And do you think the stores will have stuff in them? I mean, will transportation hold up so that you can take food from the Central Valley in California and deliver it to New York City?
No, that's not going to occur. I mean, that's going to die as part of the chaos that we're going to reach through from November to November. From November of 2009, as the dollar dies, a lot of the just-in-time systems will fail. And actually, you'll be able to tell that I'm accurate because this summer, say from about the 15th of July through to September 21, when we reach the equinox, sometime in that period of time, almost everybody will start recognizing language that is going to start speaking to the failure of the healthcare system. And there, you'll see all different kinds of language in the newspapers and on TV and stuff as they want to address health care, they want to fix it and do all of this kind of stuff. And you'll also see kinds of language that relate to the failure of the healthcare system, especially pharmaceuticals. And what I'm going to tell you now is that the pharmaceutical level of it will be failing because of the hyperinflation just beginning in precious commodities. And it won't be precious metals to start with. It'll be those things that make drugs that keep people alive. The costs on them will just start soaring like mad, and our pharmaceutical systems will start breaking down because they won't be able to get the goods.
Well, Obama is trying to get electronic medical records shoved through, and from personal experience with that, it slows you down so much that instead of seeing oh, let's say, 6 patients per hour, you might see 2,
which
will severely limit the number of doctor-to-patient visits. You know, that will cause an instant crisis if he mandates electronic medical records, because none of the electronic systems speak to each other, and they're all hard to learn. So it'll create instant chaos in the medical field.
Right, and that actually may be one of the steps along the way, is a desire to throw wrenches into the machinery and then point to the wrench as the problem rather than the machinery degrading itself. In other words, it's much better to think that, oh, the government caused this slight screw-up and it will cure itself, as opposed to thinking, oh, we've got a system here that will be dead no matter what. So our level of data for year and a half now has said that starting this fall, disease is going to be a real issue, not necessarily alone because of the new types of diseases or anything, so we're not saying that, you know, swine flu is going to come out and kill a lot of people, although it indeed may, but the reason that this is going to occur is because of the breakdown of the delivery of healthcare services.
Mm. And if there is such a thing as the hyperinflation you talk about, I mean, a lot of people are predicting deflation, saying all this money went into a black hole and it's never coming out. That causes deflation. But the money printing, you know, side will cause hyperinflation. What's a person to do that, say, has a 30-year mortgage and it's a fixed rate? Well, won't they be able to pay off their mortgage in a day with
hyperinflation if they had something to sell for that currency? Correct.
Yeah, right.
But if they're on a fixed income working for somebody at X number of dollars per hour or month or whatever, then they're basically going to get screwed by the hyperinflation. But if they had, for instance, oh, I don't know, you say you bought, feathers, and feathers were more valuable than the dollar, and you could sell the feathers. As the price escalates, you could take those cheap dollars that you used to buy those feathers and turn them around and pay off your mortgage, if it is meaningful. A lot of these companies are going to be going broke much faster than the general populace. And so you may find people that just aren't there to collect the mortgage.
Well, I've thought things like the Bank of America is on the ropes and,
yeah,
you know.
And eventually they'll aggregate them all up to the point where they get to that jubilee, because the government owns all the banks and then won't be able to actually manage or run them all. We all know how government is just so efficient at doing things.
Thank God that they are inefficient. Imagine the IRS being efficient.
Oh, actually efficient. I know. It would be a scary thought. But it's going to get to the point where the hyperinflation and deflation, bear in mind, are not mutually exclusive. And in fact, one always follows the other. You always have a huge deflationary period after hyperinflation, when the ultimate source of the currency collapses. So in Zimbabwe, as a matter of fact, as soon as that government goes away, then they will have deflation on a massive scale as they sort their house out and get new currency in place.
Well, it seems, you know, like we use Zimbabwe as an example. Zimbabwe used to be under Ian Smith. It was one of the richest countries in Africa. They exported food all over Africa.
And, right, right.
And so they have natural resources. They have the ability to grow food if they have the management to do it. This country seems to be full of people that are entrepreneurial and can do things. You know, there's a lot of lazy people, but there are also a lot of people who can just do stuff.
Sure, and the government and everybody else is simply getting in the way.
Getting in the way. And so I would think that if the government just becomes irrelevant, the local communities will...
We call them SOCs, self-organizing collectives.
Self-organizing collectives. And KBMR, this station, is like one of those hubs for this community. Almost everything that goes on in this community comes through here and gets announced, and people join collectives of organic farming or save the Yuba River or, you know, whatever thing happens, it sort of funnels through this station. So this is really a hub for those self-organizing collectives here.
And that's the way, actually, that we see things sort of panning out, is that the government's going to, the idea of giant centralized government is in a transformative process itself, and it's going to coagulate and stiffen up and get hard, and eventually we'll all ignore it, and then it'll crumble to pieces. And what will come after that, we think, is based on the idea of the self-organizing collectives, that, and we don't know where it will go, because you're looking at some rather long-range trends there. But if we were to think of it in a grand historical viewpoint, we're very much in a situation of, analogous to, say, after the end of the Civil War. Those people there knew that some huge historical thing had been lifted off their back, and they were in a point of transformation, but they really couldn't envision what their society would be like over the course of the next 100 years, but there was a fundamental shift and a change from that period, and we're in that same kind of thing here. So the government that will exist, or how we organize ourselves, 30 or 40 or 50 years from now will not be based on what all of us are suffering through at the moment, because that is dying. The giant centralized government monolithic kind of structures seem to have a lifespan that's rather equivalent to the underlying currency, which apparently runs between 72 to, say, 80 years, and the U.S. dollar is an exception to that because it's been the global reserve currency. But once it's gone, the underlying support for what we call the powers that be here in the U.S. also goes. And as a matter of fact, it also brings us back to, like, UFOs and stuff, because as the government has their ability to fund things removed from them, the shadow government will have its ability to steal vast quantities of money from the rest of us removed from them, and without that money, that system will break apart and start revealing itself to the light of day, and hopefully that's when all those entrepreneurial guys like myself will get out there and start rummaging around in what these people have had hidden for all these years and create the new society.
Well, the thing that bothers me the most is war, you know, this idea of Israel attacking Iran and then some possible, you know, big-time war affecting us. And I have four kids, and I think to myself, I don't want my kids drafted to fight somebody. I'd rather, you know, send them all to Brazil or something than have them drafted.
Right.
And yet that's, you know, as a parent, that's one of the greatest fears, is your kid's going to be drafted to go off and be baked in some foreign war for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, well, for corporations, basically for the U.S. empire to maintain the dollar. But see, that is ending. So the idea of perpetual war, as was designed by Cheney and Bush, cannot exist. It's actually winding down at the moment, because we're, again, our government is, in its ability to wage war, is going to very rapidly decrease beginning this coming November, and probably won't exist 18 months into the future as we understand it now. And that'll be due entirely to the amount of money and the wherewithal that it's got. So, for instance, I expect that there's going to be a massive impact on chemtrails, simply because it costs 9,000 gallons of kerosene per hour per region to run the chemtrails, and pretty soon we won't be able to afford it, and we won't be able to afford to create nuclear weapons and move them around the planet or try to impose our will on people. And also, once the dollar dies, a huge amount of the impetus for that is removed, because right now, realistically, whether you think about it or not, Bush went in and did a lot of nasty things to Iraq. But the primary reason he was allowed to do it by the powers that be was to keep the dollar alive a few more years.
And to keep China from getting the oil.
No, they don't care about that, actually.
Oh, I thought that was one of the underlying things.
They may have propped it up, but it was all about the dollar. And as long as China keeps taking the dollars, we're good friends with them. And that's why you see Geithner over there, Pelosi, everybody trying to pump up the dollar. And you notice, of course, Geithner and Pelosi are being laughed at by the Chinese.
Literally.
Very polite society.
Literally laughed at.
Yeah, correct. And students are laughing at him. So the disrespect level from generation to generation there is just staggering. That alone tells me that China is very close to becoming the dominant player in the world, and that our projections of the death of the American empire over the next 18 months, beginning in November, are probably fairly accurate.
Well, I wish ourselves well.
Well, we'll come out of it okay. You know, it's like the planet is not at risk. Humans are at risk. The American empire is at risk, but the American populace is not, because we don't live in and exist for that empire. It merely has been parasitically, you know, sucking our life's blood for all these years. Imagine what we can do when we're free of it.
Well, if we were allowed to mine our own resources, you know, dig for our own oil, do whatever we have to do to conserve.
Well, we won't be allowed. We will do.
Right, but I'm saying if we were allowed, or if we took the government off our back so we could just do stuff for ourselves.
Right.
And I would imagine, like, when you see all these SUVs driving by, I would imagine there would be a whole lot more people riding bicycles or taking trains.
Even beyond that, you know, spaceships or who knows what.
Something.
You know, if we've got anti-gravity, maybe we'll have a little anti-gravity surfboards.
Who knows? Something different from the present.
Yeah.
So much fun talking to you again, Cliff. Our hour is winding to a close, and I'm going to have to stop and ask people to please help support more shows like this one with you, and I look forward to talking to you again sometime. It's always fascinating having a glimpse of the future, and your rickety time machine really works as far as I can tell.
Well, pick me up after the 21st of June, because we should have our next issue out then.
Yeah, and the listeners can go to Half Past Human, all one word, halfpasthuman.com. on the World Wide Web, and get these reports from Cliff High, and Igor.
And we've got a huge price reduction, 90% off on the last report that details a lot of what we've been discussing.
Yeah, and they're very intense. You've got to sit down and devote some time to reading and thinking about them, because you don't waste words, and there's an awful lot of information in there that we didn't cover.
Yeah.
Thanks, Slip.
Anytime, guy.
Appreciate it.
Okay, want those CDs, too.
You'll have to email me the address to send them to.
Oh, no worries. It's on its way.
Okay, cool.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.